Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us this morning. We have a guest in our studio. We have Chief Thrasher from Sierra Vista Police Department. And on the phone, we have Hal. He's going to give us an update on what's going on with the alleged raid.
It's a pretty serious situation. There's three federal acts. The most serious one is the Espionage Act, which when they unsealed the warrant and all the information with it. The Espionage Act, to give you an idea of the seriousness, is it's one of the few federal laws or federal acts where capital punishment can ultimately be opposed. So that it gives you an idea of the severity of the act. Now, with that said, they have secured classified material. Some of it is top secret level, which by inference means top secret. And then within that realm, there's an area called sensitive compartment information. Not everybody needs to know everything, and the whole system of intelligence is need to know. So this is stuff that's put in specific compartments, and you have to be read in, as they say, to read those compartments. Well, according to the documentation that's out there, they found at least 13 sets of classified documents, some of them were at the top secret SCI level. And to have that type of information, it has to be in a sensitive compartment and information facility, or SCIF. There's nothing to indicate it was in a SCIF. They did say there was a vault. But having a vault doesn't necessarily secure that level of classification. But then again, they also said some of it was just sitting in the basement. So beyond everything else done with espionage or allegations of espionage, stuff like that, there is gross mishandling of classified material here, and that's what they're looking at.
Well, that sounds pretty egregious to me. What do you think's going to happen?
Well, interestingly, if you remember the Hillary Clinton locker-up stuff about
right.
mishandling emails and stuff, well, interestingly, when President Trump came into office, he actually changed the law to strengthen that portion of law, which part of it was if you're a federal official, a government official, and you leave office and you do take classified materials and you improperly or you know, have classified materials, that they can federally prosecute you for that. So he actually strengthened that law, which can potentially incur 5 years of prison time.
Karma.
You wouldn't be the first person who's thought of that. It's like there is such a tremendous degree of irony on this. But with all that said, the president is the ultimate adjudicator of classified material. It's under the executive branch. And the president does have the authority to declassify material, and that's what President Trump is asserting, is that he declassified that material. Now, there's procedures and process involved in that.
Right.
This is going to be an interesting case because he was the president. And there will obviously be a very strong legal argument to say he's the president. If he declassified it, he declassified it. And then it will go into, did he actually do it? Is there documentation of that? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch this.
Yeah,
I just, you know, everything. I've been entertained for the last, like, week and a half. So I appreciate you telling us what happened. And, you know, it doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound good for our safety and security, for sure. But
yeah.
Thank you again for coming on and letting us know.
You bet, Sherry.
Okay.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Take care. Okay. Like I said, in the studio, we have the chief of police from Sierra Vista, and I used to live there. And I want to know a little bit more about you. I don't know anything about you. You're like this mystery person. What is your history? What's your background, and why did you get involved with law enforcement?
Well, Sherry, thank you for having me today. It's my pleasure to be here. Well, a little bit about myself. I'm as close to a Sierra Vista native as you can be without actually being born there. We moved there. My family moved there when my father was stationed as a post veterinarian there in the early 1970s when I was just an infant.
Okay.
So I'm getting this look now. So Dr. Gary Thrasher is my father.
Oh, no way.
Yes, he is.
Okay.
So he was a post veterinarian, and he got out of the Army there, and he opened the Coronado Veterinary Clinic down in Sierra Vista. we spent some number of years there. In about 1980, we moved to Northern Nevada. My father was a ranch manager out in the middle of absolute nowhere. 1980, so we couldn't even get a no television reception. Couldn't even get satellite. Wow. Had a generator for electricity and an 8-party line phone where we lived in Northern Nevada. And so I consider those my growing up years. We were only there for 4 years. But from 9 till about 13, I really grew up and learned a lot about responsibility, personal responsibility, and relying on family and friends. We moved to Texas for a year, and then we came back to the Sierra Vista area just before I entered high school. My dad opened up another large animal ranch practice, and then I went to high school at Buena High School, where I met my wife. We're high school sweethearts.
Did you know Jim Castile?
I don't recognize that name.
Okay.
So I graduated from Buena High School. Actually, my wife and I came up here and attended the University of Arizona. And cool. I was actually had an intent to join the Army. I was a ROTC cadet in high school and at University of Arizona. I was on an ROTC scholarship. I had majored in criminal justice because that was kind of an interest of mine, but I had actually intended to do a full career, Army career as an officer.
So what happened?
Well, I went to airborne school as a cadet and I got hurt.
Oh,
and
no.
My last jump, I injured my back. I was kind of the dumb 20-year-old at the time, didn't really tell anybody, but it caught up with me after about a year or so, and this is during the Gulf War period. Oh. A bunch of us were signed up on scholarship right at the start of that. I know they were worried about the possibility of a lot of casualties, so they signed a lot of us up. When that didn't happen, they had way too many of us signed up. And so with my injury, I did not get my commission. They still helped pay for my school, but I didn't get my commission. And so then I made a decision at that point that I was going to go to law school. And so I did do that. I went to law school at Creighton University. But in the middle of my second year, I realized I didn't want to be a lawyer.
Yeah, no kidding. It's good to have the law degree, but, you know, to have the knowledge, but to actually be a lawyer, that's, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I was borrowing an awful lot of money to go there, so I actually did quit law school a couple months into my second year. I came back, and I worked on Fort Huachuca for about a year and a half when I saw the opening at Sierra Vista and decided to put in because it was always an interest of mine. So I kind of joke that, I'm an ROTC and law school dropout, and I ended up the chief of police. But
so when you signed up at Sierra Vista, where do you go for your training?
So at that time, I attended the Phoenix Police Department Academy. They had just shut down ALETA, the state academy, and they were making a contract and an agreement with Phoenix PD, but it hadn't started yet. So I was trained at the Phoenix PD Academy. And then right now, currently though, we run our own academy with the Sheriff's Office and Cochise College. But back then, most of us went to Phoenix PD, and for a while, a lot of our guys went to the Tucson Academy. But now we run our own with Cochise College.
So how does your academy compare to, like, the Tucson, the one over there, what's it called, COTA or something?
Yes, COTA is the old ALETA. So okay. That's the Correctional Officer Training Academy. And then, of course, you've got Tucson's academy. So ours is actually at the college, but it's a full-time academy. It's 20 weeks long. It's the same curriculum set by Arizona Post that all academies have to teach. So we're teaching all the same stuff with some additional things that we add in at the end of the academy that the sheriff's office and us need. But we take anybody from the state. So we've had people from Graham County, Greenlee County. We've had somebody in the academy right now from Santa Cruz County. Some of the Indian reservations have sent some people to our academy. So
they can go to your academy but work someplace else when they're done because it's Arizona Post
Certified Academy.
Certified.
That's correct.
Okay.
And it's in partnership with the college. So they stay at the college campus down in Douglas in the dorms. They have the classroom there. That's where Cochise College main campus is in Douglas.
I did not know that.
Yes. And so that's where the dorms are for Cochise College. And so that's why it's down there at this moment.
And how far from the prison is it?
Because
I know there's
a
prison, down there.
The Douglas campus, Coachella College, is actually outside of Douglas a little bit,
okay.
A couple miles. So it's kind of its own little oasis out there in the middle of nowhere, right there on the highway. And so it's actually a very good location for us. We do have to do driver's training up in Sierra Vista at our airport, and we do the firearms training at the sheriff's office in Bisbee.
You do driver training at the airport?
We do it at the airport.
Would you race the jets as they take off and come down?
Or yeah, so on the tarmac area, it's a big enough area that you can set up the driving course, both backing and the pursuit course out there. So you could do, and that's where we do our in-service driver's training right now, is at the Sierra Vista airport. So.
Very cool. All right. So how long have you been on the department?
So a little over 26 years now.
Okay.
I started my career with them as a patrol officer, and I was a patrol officer for about 5 years. During that time, I had become a defensive tactics instructor. I was part of, I became a senior officer. I was promoted to sergeant and took over our property crimes unit. It was a brand new unit at the time, investigating burglaries, vehicle burglaries, auto thefts. We were having a pretty good problem at that time down in Sierra Vista. I became a member of our SWAT team at that point, started off as a sniper, and then was entry and became
a technician. What kind of training do you have to go through to be a SWAT person?
So you go to a basic SWAT school.
And where's that?
And a bunch of different agencies run them.
Okay.
So I went to Mesa PD SWAT school.
Okay.
Basic SWAT school. And then we had our own sniper instructor that did the sniper training, and then we go to some additional training for that. Right now, we've sent people up to the Pima County Sheriff's Office SWAT school. We've sent them. So it's just wherever we can get somebody in to go to a basic SWAT school to get them that initial training. And then our team has to train. They train twice a month. With the whole unit, and then the snipers get an extra 8 hours a month as well so that they know how to operate together. So
wow, that's a lot of training. You have to do it, though, if you're going to be good at it.
Well, and it's such a high liability area.
Yes.
So that it is really important that they get that training. And then they take one week a year, what we call it SWAT week. In fact, we're coming up on it, where they spend a whole week just training together. And to do that training
in your area, or they all train together?
It's in our area for only our team.
Okay.
And then periodically we'll do joint trainings with the sheriff's office, because there's a lot of times where we're helping each other out regarding that kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
So we'll do the joint trainings with them a couple times a year, just to make sure that we've got some cohesiveness there.
I know the sheriff speaks highly of you.
Oh, well, you know what, he's been wonderful since he's been sheriff. I tell you, down in Cochise County, he took over, and the chiefs and everybody, we decided we got to get rid of egos in law enforcement.
Oh, absolutely.
And it doesn't matter the color of the uniform, the shape of the badge. If something bad's happening, let's get some trained individuals over there to take care of it, and then we'll figure out who has primary jurisdiction once we got control of it.
Exactly.
And so us, the federal law enforcement, have all joined in. With COVID, unfortunately, we haven't been able to do it, but we were doing quarterly meetings with all law enforcement leadership in the county, all the way from federal, state, county, local,
everybody
that to talk about issues and how we're gonna help each other out.
Have you ever gotten to a situation where it was like, no, you take it, no, you take it, no, I don't want it?
that can happen, yes, but usually it's the primary jurisdiction is the one that gets it. But I can tell you there are situations where, like, yeah, we're definitely turning this one over to the primary jurisdiction.
It's yours. Have fun. So what else happened? How long have you been a sergeant non-SWAT?
So I was a sergeant. Not very long, actually. I promoted a sergeant to lieutenant pretty quickly. I had tested for sergeant for lieutenant. I was really enjoying myself as a sergeant. I tested just for the heck of it to get some experience. I was selected. So then at that point, I became a lieutenant over all our detectives, major crimes, narcotics, property crimes, and supervised them for a year, and then they rotated me to the patrol. So we like to rotate our leadership so they get experience in different areas. And so then I was a patrol lieutenant for 3 years, rotated back into our special ops for a little while, and then was promoted to commander. And when I was promoted to commander, I then was assigned to our Administrative Services Bureau division. And I tell you, that was a shocker. Somebody coming up doing SWAT, doing search warrants, doing detective work, to them being put in charge of the administrative services. But I will tell you, it was the greatest learning experience of my life to become chief, because that's all the support function that the officers need. When an officer's on the street, he calls on his radio, the only thing he cares about is that he gets a response, yeah. not how that response happens.
Exactly.
And it's the administrative that makes it all happen. And so, you know, radio infrastructure, computer infrastructure, building infrastructure, budget, all that stuff. I did that for, gosh, I want to say 6-7 years before I made deputy chief. And then I've been chief for coming up on 7 years in October.
Is it fun?
It can be fun, and it can be pretty tough at sometimes. The whole job has been fun my entire career. I'll be honest with you, and but there have been challenges, and I will tell you, there are times where I wish I could have just the stress of a patrol officer,
yes,
and not have to worry about all the other little things that go on that we have to take care of.
So, what's going on in your area? What do we need to know about? Because I really feel what happens down there or anywhere affects everybody.
So our town is actually a very safe town. I always like to kind of look at how they report our national statistics, and I've seen where they say, well, you know, they've got a lot of violent crime down there, and mainly in terms of like aggravated assaults and our reporting of aggravated assaults. But almost all of those, the victim knows the assailant. We have very little stranger-on-stranger violent crime. Property crimes are a big issue, which is fueled by narcotics. And so, like everybody else, we're struggling with the narcotics issue and in terms right now with the counterfeit fentanyl pills and the M30 pills and those things that we're dealing with. But the most, I would say, important thing that we're dealing with right now, and I know Sheriff Daniels has been on the radio before to talk about this, and we're having meetings and we're forming task force, is because of what's going on down at the border, the load drivers are coming through Sierra Vista.
Okay, explain to the listener what a load driver is.
Okay, so what the cartels are doing now is that by social media apps, they are recruiting people from all over the country, to be honest with you. We've had them from Tucson, we've had them from New Mexico, we've had them from Phoenix, we've had them from California, but mainly the Phoenix area. They're recruiting people that will come down and pick up an illegal alien, and they're getting anywhere from $500 to $2,000 a person to pick them up and transport them back up to the Phoenix area. And so what they're being told right now is when they need to run from the police if they're going to get pulled over, and drive as fast as they can and as recklessly as they can. And so what we started seeing is we'd try to pull somebody over for a traffic violation, a state traffic violation. They'd run. There'd be a pursuit. And in the old days, as I call it, which wasn't all that long ago.
Last week.
We would, you know, a year ago, if they got to be driving that recklessly, we'd break off the pursuit.
Right.
And then normal people would then slow down and follow the traffic laws and blend in. They're not doing that. So they're coming up into our city from the border, because we're about 16 miles from the north of the border, and they're coming through our major intersections at 100, 120 miles an hour. They're not stopping at the red lights, and they're creating a huge danger to the motoring public. We've had a fatality up in the Whetstone area regarding this. We've had a couple accidents in Sierra Vista. And so now we're in this catch-22. We're going to have to try to either stop them before they get to Sierra Vista, or we've got to block intersections and try to get them through Sierra Vista and north, and then try with the help of the sheriff's office and the Department of Public Safety and Border Patrol, get them stopped in a more secluded area where there isn't a lot of traffic. And this has been a problem. So last year, 2021, our officer, the number of pursuits doubled from the year before for us, and we're on track to double it again. It is just, it's not, we're at a point where we can't say we're going to do nothing and let them come through the city that way.
Right.
It's just too dangerous for the people come at the intersections.
Do you think they started driving that way because it's been televised and announced all over the news that people aren't supposed to drive in pursuit?
I think that's how it started. I absolutely do. They and that was our practice. If somebody really was driving that recklessly, we'd have a plate, we'd try to find them later, but again, the habit was they would then blend in after we'd stop, but they're not doing that. And a lot of them, to be clear, they're young. We're getting them as young as 14 years old.
Driving?
Taking their parents' car, coming down here to do this. And so we're talking about very young individuals that don't have great judgment in the first place. And we've actually, when we've apprehended some of them on the social media apps, you can actually see where they're giving them, somebody's scouting and watching it and giving them directions, turn right, turn. And so one of them, and they usually bring a friend with them. So they're communicating while they're driving, and they're telling them, one particular case, turn down this road. Okay, you know, if you just let your load off, let them off and keep going, they'll stop. And the person, they're still chasing me. And they're saying, well, too bad.
Too bad. You're on your own.
And so enjoy
your prison life.
We're having meetings every week, and we're working, and everybody's included, from Border Patrol, Homeland Security Investigations, our county attorney. Our county attorney's charging these individuals with state crimes like endangerment.
Oh, yeah.
To the motoring public. And this is a humanitarian crisis as well, because the people that they pick up are stuck in their vehicle and they don't have any choice to go along.
Right.
And some of them are stuck in the trunk. And so we are actually charging kidnapping under the state statutes. Our county attorney's taking those cases to try to get the message out. Don't do this down in Cochise County. You're going to go to jail.
Yeah.
But Homeland Security Investigations is working on trying to identify and deal with those that are facilitating this as well.
So these people that are being, these load people, where do they come from? Are they coming under the fence, over the fence, or are they coming through the port of entry?
They are coming through the areas where there aren't any fences right now.
Okay.
So down there so just south of Sierra Vista is Naco, and they have a Naco port of entry, and there's a big fence that goes quite a ways. But it gets to our Huachuca Mountain areas, the Huachuca Mountains, and the fence and the border fence stops. And so they're coming through the fence. Sometimes they'll cut the fence, sometimes they'll go over the fence.
I've seen that.
But they're not coming through the ports. They're going around it, and they're coming through our more rural areas of our county, just south of us. They're getting picked up along the side of a highway. Highway 92 runs south of us and then runs right along the border. All the way to Bisbee, and so that's where they're getting picked up, and they're coming up through the Coronado National Memorial, those areas where there's less fence, and Border Patrol's doing all they can. I mean, they're short staffed now,
and they're
cooperating. They're working with us. We're all doing the best we can to get this thing taken care of and try to get them stopped before they even get into the Sierra Vista area. But once those speeds start, there's not a real good spot south of Sierra Vista to deal with them. So we're trying to just get them through the area. Kudos to Department of Public Safety and their leadership in terms of being some of those that takes the lead to get them off the road. Because once they get up on the I-10, they're still driving that way.
Yeah.
And so it's just dangerous to the entire community in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, no kidding. The people that are coming through, are they bringing drugs, or are they just people who don't want to wait the 20 years it takes to become a citizen? What is their story?
So in Cochise County, the majority of that are coming through, we are 20-year-old males are the ones that are typically coming through in Cochise County. We have very few of the unaccompanied minors. Those are usually going through Texas or Yuma. Or the family units, we usually have the single individual male. Most of them are not carrying drugs. They're just coming through, but the cartels are learning to intermix with a group.
So
they'll come across. When they come across, they're all dressed in camouflage. They have special carpeted shoes they put on to try to blend.
That's pretty remarkable.
And they have their backpack with clothes. And so maybe there's 10, and maybe the cartel will throw one carrier in with them. And it's no longer the marijuana backpack, 50-pound backpack. It's typically the pills now and the fentanyl and that type of stuff that's coming through.
What do you think the solution is for this? Because it seems like the whole system for coming into this country is broke for both sides. It's not something that we've got people waiting, 10, 20 years to get a court hearing because we don't have enough judges. In my head, I'm thinking close the border, fix the problem, and then reopen it. But nobody's doing that. But what's the solution?
Well, it is a difficult solution. I think it has to be multi-pronged. You do need to make sure that it's not so easy to get in. So you got to close that border. We got to get the federal government and the federal leadership to take a more proactive approach to our border. And you got to start there. But then you got to fix the process issue.
Yeah, it's huge.
And so they could do that. And then I don't disagree with also helping some of these countries where these people are coming from that need to get a better life. And some of them, a lot of them are coming up to try to get a better life. Some of them have ill intentions, but most don't. And so you've got to do some work with some of those countries to help the populations there. But the process, I think we could probably greatly expand our work permits and that kind of stuff that could really help with some of this stuff. I'm not an immigration officer. I don't specialize in that. I specialize in our local community safety.
Yeah.
You do have to start. You have to start where it's not so easy to get through.
Yeah.
And then you can work on it otherwise.
You're talking about 20-year-olds. My grandfather came to America and joined the military so that he could become a citizen. Wouldn't that be an option for some of these people?
It absolutely is. In fact, we just had a sergeant retire last year, and that's what he did. He grew up in Agua Prieta down just AP. On the other side from Douglas.
Yeah.
And he ended up was able to go to Douglas High School and legally, and then he joined the U.S. military and he got a citizenship through the U.S. military. He's one of our best officers we've ever had. And it was his way of doing that is getting through the system and getting that citizenship. And so it is an option.
They should advertise that.
I mean, you got to vet the right people, right?
Right.
Like you do with anything else, but you got to get into the country legally first. But there might be some way in our process probably to do the permitting. If you get a work permit, you can do that to join the military possibly and go through that process. It could be an option. I'm not sure nowadays, in our country, we're having a lot of trouble recruiting both military and police officers.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's cultural or if that's like it is all, in a lot of places. And some of the, I've had classes with law enforcement leaders from other countries. And while they may deal with different criminal stuff and their laws may be different, when you start asking about personnel issues, it's all the same.
Yeah.
People are people are people.
Exactly.
And so they, all their personnel issues are almost identical to what we deal with.
That's kind of sad.
Well, it is. It's sad, but it's also kind of comforting that you kind of feel it's just not
okay,
us.
Okay, I'm not alone. I'm not alone.
Right.
Yeah, we've had people on here from all over the country, and they all say the same thing. Is you'll try to recruit people, and the quality of person, too. It's just not like when I was growing up, when you were growing up, there's no accountability. And, it makes it difficult.
It does make it difficult. I do think, some of the newer officers that we're hiring, this is one of those leadership struggles that we have. When I hired on, we put our whole life into the job.
Mm-hmm.
And we identify, when people ask you what you do, you say, I am a cop. It's your identity. The newer generation isn't like that, but I think they're going to be healthier for it in the long run.
Yeah.
But getting them to work overtime when I need them to work overtime can be a struggle.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few.
This is Nathan Chabon, producer for Law Matters. I have a goal to reach and I need your help. I want to put the DEA out of business. That's right, the Drug Enforcement Agency. If you have an addiction problem or know someone who does, please reach out to lawmatters1030.org and click the DEA tab for more information. Reaching out is the first step. We have the resources if you have the will. You can beat this demon and help me put the Drug Enforcement Agency out of business.
Do you have security cameras on your home and live around the 400 block of West Ohio Street? On June 1st, 2021, a murder took place, and you just might have the information we need. To stay anonymous, upload your video to 88Crime. ¿Tienes cámaras de seguridad en tu casa? ¿Y vives cerca de la cuadra 400 oeste de la calle Ohio? El 1 de junio de 2021 se registró un homicidio y es posible que usted tenga la información necesaria para resolver este caso. Para permanecer anónimo, sube su video a la página 88crime.org. Were you in the area of the 4400 block of South 7th Avenue at 10 p.m. on July 23rd, 2021? If you have security cameras, you just might have a tip that will help solve the murder that took place there. To stay anonymous, use 88Crime and upload your video. Si estabas o tienes cámaras de seguridad en la área de 4400 sur de la 7 Avenida a las 10 de la tarde, el 23 de julio de 2021, es posible que tengas información que resuelva el homicidio que tuvo lugar ahí. Para permanecer anónimo, use la página 88crime.org y suba su video.
Thanks for staying with us. I want to tell everybody because we're having technical difficulties here. So I wasn't able to record a promo. I want to tell everybody that next week we are going to be talking about bail reform with Ken Wood and gun law loopholes with Rex Scott. And I also want to tell everybody, I'm going to make some announcements here. About the 27th of August, we're going to be broadcasting from the Harley-Davidson dealership at INA and I-10, and we're supporting the Arizona Fallen Hero Memorial Riders. So if you want to register for this ride, you don't need a motorcycle. Schwinn will do. Come over there on the 27th, and registration will be open. And we're asking our listeners to nominate a veteran. If you've got a veteran that you think deserves a day of recognition, we have a contest on our website. Go to the contest page. Nominate a veteran, and we're going to honor him or her in November. So our guest today is the chief of Sierra Vista Police Department, Chief Thrasher, and we've been talking about all the wonderful things that are happening in Sierra Vista.
Yes, again, thank you. That's thank you for doing that announcement. That's always wonderful when we have people that do groups to honor our fallen officers and what they've
Absolutely.
Done. You know, it's one of those things that I know my wife and everything thinks about every time you leave the house, and when the phone rings in the middle of the night, you go running out the door. So those are always fun to participate in and be a part of.
And they deserve the recognition.
Absolutely.
So what else is going on down there? You went to Buena High School. The Buena High School I knew isn't there anymore. I think it's a car lot.
Yeah, and that's the Buena High School I went to. Yes,
yeah.
And it's a gas station, a car lot. That part of it, because it was two campuses at the time when I went there. Part of it is still part of the school district, but it's their district offices and stuff. So
okay,
but they built a new high school over there, and so we've got a school resource officer at the high school. There's roughly about 2,000 kids in that school.
And one officer?
One officer that's assigned over to that school.
Do all the schools have a resource officer?
They do not. We are authorized at 68 officers. So we're a population of 46,000. We only have an authorization of 68 officers. And we only have 60 positions filled at the moment.
So you're hiring.
So we are hiring. In fact, that was one of my big things here. I got to give a plug. So
okay.
So we are hiring, and we will be hiring. We've got probably about 15 people that'll be eligible to retire in the next 5 to 10 years too.
Ooh, so, wow, you're really hiring.
So we'll be hiring. I've been authorized to overfill. We've got the 8 officer positions that are open, and then I've got a couple brand new positions that we're currently advertising right now. We're starting community service officer positions like Tucson has.
Okay.
So we'll have two of those. And then we're having a civilian background investigator position open up. So
what do they do?
So they would do the investigations, hiring background investigations on applicants.
Okay.
Liquor licenses, the person will also be tasked with doing our internal administrative investigations. So right now, all that stuff is assigned to one of our major crimes detectives. And I only have 4 of them.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes our backgrounds take a little longer than I'd like on the hiring process. So We're going to try to use a civilian position. They don't have to be an Arizona certified post officer. They do have to have 4 years investigative experience from something to apply.
From something.
Yes. Yeah, so law enforcement, Department of Defense, some type of investigative experience they need to have.
So do you hire people out of the military?
We do. And we do as part of our officers also. So we require 30 college credits to apply with us. We actually require you to have 60 college credits to work as an officer.
But when you take the training, isn't that college credit?
And that's what we're doing now. So before we weren't. And okay. You had to have 30 college credits, and then you could go to the academy and get the other 30 from Cochise College to the academy.
Right.
So now we recognize the military joint services transcript. And so if they have at least 30 college level credit, either undergraduate or graduate, on their joint services transcript, they qualify to apply with us. And then they would get the other 30 at the academy. So we are accepting that joint services transcript. But before, probably we've changed that a couple years ago, they would have to go to a college and apply to the college and get those college credits.
And those first 30 credits are right. A little boring.
Right. So now we're just accepting them right off from the military, and we're working with the Transition Assistance Program. We actually have one individual at the academy right now that's still actually in the Army, but the Army has an internship program where they go work for whoever the company is going to hire them for 3 months.
Have you advertised at DM?
We have advertised everywhere.
Okay.
And we've taken recruiting trips to Fort Bliss and to Fort Hood. And obviously Fort Huachuca, and we've been sending them to all the transition offices, you know, to that what we're doing to try to get those people hired for us.
Fort Bliss, you're spreading it out. Have you been to San Diego? They've got a bunch of people there.
Yes, and it's actually harder to recruit the ones from California. Fort Bliss, it turns out they actually have a community college academy there too that we're working with, there's a lot of people in the Las Cruces and the El Paso area that are very familiar with Sierra Vista and Fort Huachuca and Tucson because of the I-10 coming through.
Right.
And so we just took a trip out there. We were at their community college and at Fort Bliss, and a lot of them knew exactly what we were talking about. The climate atmosphere is very similar. So we're seeming to get a little bit more interest coming out of that in our recruiting process. Pretty much we're advertising nationwide for officers.
So if you're hiring anybody who's already law enforcement, can they just transition into your department?
Yes. So we have also a lateral officer program. So they will get credit up to 9 years for the agency. So we have a, like any other, the pay scale, they have steps, you know, step one, step two, and each year is a step. And so if you have up to nine years experience, you could get a step, you can get hired as a step nine as a lateral officer. If you're an Arizona certified officer, it's a lot easier. And as long as your certification's active, you just go into our field training program once you get hired.
And what does that entail?
So that's a minimum of 12 weeks of training with a training officer sits next to you in the seat. Pretty much grades you every day. It's a daily observation report. He gets a report card every day, which did good, which did bad. And they go through three different officers, and then they go back to the original for 2 weeks in an observation phase where that training officer isn't supposed to help them, just supposed to observe to make sure they can do the job on their own before they are sent out on their own and get off field training. If an officer is certified in another state, we will hire them and then challenge the academy so they could go to Arizona Post, they meet the minimum requirements like anybody else, and then they can take a test to try to get out of the academy and then take the driver's training, pass the driver's training and the firearms.
Test out of it?
Test out of the academy if you've been to an academy in another state.
So if you had a policeman from Chicago and they wanted to work in Sierra, they'd feel like they were on vacation.
Well, they may or they may not, because we really do work our officers hard because we expect them to do a lot of things. Our patrol officers do almost everything. So they work traffic, they take calls for service, they investigate cases.
Do you have a call center?
We work with the sheriff's office, so we have a joint communication center with the sheriff's office.
Okay.
It's called CCOM. And so we, I think, I want to say it was 2017, 2018, we merged and we created the CECOM. So now Sheriff's Office, Service to Police Department, Wachuca City PD, part-time for Bisbee T, part-time for Tombstone Marshals, and all the fire departments in the entire, pretty much the entire county, are dispatched out of this one center. And it's out of Sarvista. And it's been a struggle in making it happen as when you first start this stuff up, but it's been great in terms of being able to communicate with each other now. We've had so many cases with the sheriff's office where we were both dealing with something and we're trying to make phone calls to the other dispatch center with the information. That's never a good thing.
Yeah.
So now they're sitting next to each other and then we can get on their frequency. The sheriff's department has been gracious enough to allow us on their radio infrastructure that Mark Daniels was instrumental in getting put in place. And so now all our radios, we have everybody's frequency in there and we can turn to it if we need to. And it's been really good for that. They're hiring as well. They're really struggling. We really need dispatchers down there. They're one of the higher paid dispatchers in the state. So anybody that likes to be thinking about being a dispatcher, check out.
Where would they have to live? There
is no residency requirement, but the center is located in Sierra Vista.
Okay.
And they would actually apply. The city of Sierra Vista is the hiring agent for CECOM.
Okay.
So they would apply through the city of Sierra Vista to become a dispatcher. CECOM is its own entity run by a joint powers authority.
Okay.
But the city of Sierra Vista handles the finances and the human resources, and then the county handles the radio infrastructure, computers, and the building. So
it is joint ever?
It is absolutely joint.
You know, and I would suggest to anybody who's thinking about doing any of these jobs, go to your library or go online, research what the requirements are, practice,
and then come do a ride-along.
Yes.
Come ride along with an officer. You can go and sit in the dispatch center and learn what they do, because not every agency does the same stuff.
Right.
And I think it's important for people to kind of get an idea. We have had occasion where somebody's gone through the academy and they get out on the road, they start doing the job, and they realize this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to happen earlier, but as long as they realize that at some point.
When you're answering the phone and you're handing off that call to the first responder, you don't always get to know what happens.
And that is the biggest complaint the dispatchers have.
Yeah.
And what happened with that person, especially on critical incidents. So we started doing stress incident debriefs on major incidents that we invite the dispatchers, anybody, firefighters. And the dispatchers like it because they get some closure that they don't always get. And one of the things our dispatch center does that we started up about, I guess, a little over a year now, they do emergency medical dispatch through there. So they will give pre-arrival instructions to those on scene. So if somebody goes into cardiac arrest and you call 911, they will give you CPR instructions over the phone, stay on the phone with you until a first responder gets there. So it's been a great program in terms of saving lives.
What kind of training do they go through? How long is that? Because that sounds pretty intense.
So
you've got somebody's life in your hands.
It can be. So we have actually, it's a company that runs a program called ProQA, and they have an entire training program for the emergency medical dispatch that when our dispatchers get hired, they go through that training almost immediately, and then they go into training with a actual dispatcher sitting next to them, helping them answer the phones, giving them direction. And that's just for answering the phones. And there's a whole different section on talking on the radio and keeping track of the officers and the firefighters and all those things too. So,
yeah, because there's things that, you know, people are hysterical and you have to calm them down and talk to them and use certain language so you're not, throwing kerosene on the fire.
It can be very stressful. When we had the dispatch center in our building and I'd walk in there and everything else, and sometimes I'd sit at the console to fill in if somebody needed a break or something. I don't think I could do that job personally for all day long. It takes a certain personality and they are definitely invaluable to the community.
Is anybody ever surprised to hear your voice when you answer the phone?
There's times, we're small enough now, there are times where I'll go make traffic stops. People are surprised when they get pulled over by the chief of police, but,
Do they beg for forgiveness?
Everybody begs for forgiveness.
I'm so sorry. So what else is happening down there that we need to know about, like vehicle burglaries?
Right. So vehicle burglaries has always been a big issue in Sierra Vista. I think they're a big issue in every community. I would say to get the message out, lock your cars. Remove
that's
any value.
That's the biggest thing. Lock your car.
Well, it's interesting because there's so many of them, the car doors are unlocked.
Right.
And then they leave valuables in the passenger compartment. So remove your valuables from the passenger compartment, put them in the trunk if you need to. Don't, and then lock the doors. We have instances where people are just going through parking lots, checking car doors.
Yeah.
And I've seen it, taking some of the valuables. And sometimes it's just minor stuff. But yes, definitely. The phrase lock it or lose it. So we say lock it or lose it. Lock your cars, remove the valuables. People get complacent, and I understand, and they feel they're safe, and I'm glad they feel they're safe, but the thieves are out there. So just make sure you lock your car doors. The other program we have going down in Sierra Vista, and it got off to a great start in 2021, it's our Better Bucks program. It's called Better Bucks. And this was actually started up in Flagstaff by Flagstaff PD. And it's a way to kind of curb panhandling and to help those that are in need. And so we have started up with our police department, with our community resource officer, and he got city council buy-in, and he now has a board. We have a nonprofit board that runs the program. And so they take in donations and they create booklets, and they're called Better Bucks. And there's a booklet of $5 in it. And it costs $6. And then we have agreements with stores like Safeway and Fry's. And so you give these to people that are panhandling, and they can go in and buy essentials with it. And there's just a list of stuff they can buy. They can't buy alcohol. They can't buy any of those other things that might help with their, if they have a substance abuse problem. But it can help in terms of the number of panhandlers you have and the fact that you're actually helping people. And they're getting the essentials with these Better Bucks. The city of Sierra Vista is on board, has a free bus pass on there for them, so they can get to services. And then we run a program monthly with that, with all the service organizations in the community, where people can come to a one-stop shop to get help. Housing help, if it's employment help, those kind of things.
Where's that located?
So we run that out of our community center, or at the Ethel Berger Center, we call it, in Sierra Vista. So it's run
on Fry Boulevard.
It's actually behind the city complex on Coronado Drive,
okay.
Behind the library, up where all the city complex is, and that's once a month that they do that. But the Better Buck stuff is really taken off. We actually have one particular store that has been vocal that their shopliftings have gone down since the Bucks have come in.
That's a plus.
And so we're now getting service organizations will buy the Better Bucks. And so what happens is then if Fry's takes in 5 Better Bucks, they get reimbursed for it from the program. So they still get their money. That's why they end up continuing to participate in that. So the Better Bucks board will then reimburse them for whatever they turn in on the Better Bucks. And so service organizations are buying them, handing them out. And it doesn't have to be the panhandler. It could be just somebody that's in need, somebody that's struggling. And it'll help them purchase those essential items they need to live.
You should tell Tucson about that.
Well, we've now gotten a lot of inquiries down here since we started up. Like I said, Flagstaff PD, give them credit. They're the ones that started this. There's a whole nonprofit organization up in Flagstaff that came down and helped us get started. So I want to give them credit. They've been most helpful in getting us started.
Was that a college student?
No, I don't think it was.
No?
I think it was a brainchild of Flagstaff PD.
Really?
Originally. Yeah.
Cool.
So far it's making progress, and now we're now branching out. We're now exploring ideas with that program of possibly providing day labor type stuff for those that want to earn some money and that type of thing. So.
Okay, what kind of day labor are you talking about?
We are still working on that.
Okay.
We are definitely in the brainchild, mode at this point. But those type of things, more, I would imagine, some construction, yard work, those type of things, type work. But I don't know. It could expand out. We're looking at grant opportunities regarding with that type of system, and to try to help those that are in need. Because especially now with the economy the way it is, people are struggling a lot more. And we're starting to see, while they may not necessarily be homeless, there are people that are really struggling out there.
Yeah, there are. With everything that's going on, it's been rough for everybody. But I like that program. That makes sense. I think we should do that.
So we're going to see where we can go and expand that program. But the Better Bucks has been and city council, our city council, was so excited about it. They budgeted an initial fund to start the program. Our city council.
You see, that's what you need.
So, and now it's pretty much self-sustaining. So,
that's very cool. Yeah, because I know there's a lot of stores up here. Walgreens is one of them, and you know, you're talking Fry's. They're just walking in and they're grabbing stuff and running out.
Right.
And, you know, and it's probably stuff that they need, they can't afford. But still, if they had a program like this, they wouldn't have to do that.
And it's never going to stop at 100%.
No, nothing will.
But it, those that, you know, it can help. And part of the issue is you get some aggressive panhandlers out there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're giving them something, not giving them cash, that can help maybe facilitate, not all of them, but a lot of them have substance abuse problems, and you don't want to help them with that program.
Right.
So you give them the Better Bucks. I've even had people come up and ask me, do you have some?
Oh, wow.
That's a great program that
do
I...
Do you have
I
any think, with you? What does
I
it
do
look
not,
like?
I do not have them with me. In fact, I thought about that when I walked out, when I got home last night. I'm like, I didn't bring any of it to show.
Oh,
so,
no.
But it's just a little coupon book.
Okay.
And then, like I said, on the back, we have a bus pass. It's free so that people can ride the bus, and other programs on there. And then there's a whole list of resources on that are printed on there. So if you have housing issues or, you know, Arizona at Work, all those type of things are listed there for resources. Veterans resources are part of that as well. Trying to get that word out to people get the help that they need.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many people and they don't know where to turn. And a lot of people are finding themselves in the situation for the first time ever. So they really don't know where to go and what to do.
Right. Right now it's just in Sierra Vista at this point because it's just the Sierra Vista stores that have agreed to be part of this.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to sign an agreement. And of course, they have to get reimbursed by the nonprofit. So, but more and more stores are starting to come on board. We have some fast food restaurants that have come on board. Not just the grocery stores. Goodwill store is on board, so if people need clothing, they can use those things for that type of stuff too. So,
well, I'm going to tell everybody to call you.
Well, to call Corporal Scott Borgstad. He's our community resource officer. He's the one, obviously, that set up this program for us.
And I'm going to tell him what you said,
and he'll know it. So,
that's awesome. So. If somebody's thinking about getting into the industry, become a law enforcement, what words of encouragement do you have for them?
It is a great profession, and it is very rewarding, and it is very challenging. So I want people to come through, and I want them to have, you know, the eyes wide open thing. Know what you're getting yourself into. Just do the research. Do the ride-alongs.
Do you have a helicopter?
We do not have a helicopter,
but we have
UAVs. We have the little drones. We have a program for that, but we don't have a helicopter. But we do have all the other positions. We have the SWAT team. We have major detectives, property crimes detectives, narcotics detectives. We have people can be part of, you know, we have a part-time bicycle unit, those type of things. We take great pride in Sierra Vista that if you come to us, you're going to probably get the best training in the state. So not only do you go to the academy, we do in-service training for 4 hours every single month, and we do some type of firearms training every single month, defensive tactics several times a year, and the driver's training. So we continue, it's just a continuous training revolution that we do with our officers so that they can do their job safely and stay out of trouble.
And stay out of trouble. Are people still falling off of Carr Canyon?
We haven't had one in a while. The county search and rescue, the sheriff's search and rescue is out every weekend right now. And people get lost in the mountains.
Me.
And yes, that's
always amazed me. Okay, I want to remind everybody next week we're going to talk about bail bond reform, and we're going to talk about the loopholes in the gun law. And I want to thank you for coming all the way up from Sierra Vista.
It's my pleasure.
And next time, bring the coupons with you, please.
I will do that.
And until next week, Shop local and stay safe. Thank you.